We're talking today to Mark Myers, whose new book, Anatomy of 55 More Songs, The Oral History of Top Hits That Change Rock, Pop, and Soul, from Groove Press, which is a follow-up to his 2016 smash bestseller, Anatomy of a Song. He collected 55 oral histories of iconic songs based on his popular Wall Street Journal column. How are you this morning?
Great, Dave. How about you?
I am very well. Enjoyed your book very much.
Thank you.
So the criteria for choosing the songs in the book, you had three of them, and I absolutely agree with these are what makes these songs particularly interesting. You want to tell us what those are?
Well, I mean, for a song to have made my book, it had to have been a great song that people know but haven't heard in a while. It also had to be iconic, meaning it stood the test of time. If I just did songs that happened yesterday, in 10 years from now, we might think they're junk. So I needed to give a little bit of a lapse of about 25 years. So I had to go back at least 25 years to find them and then go back further than that. But these songs also had to be, they had to have changed music history in some way. There had to have been some transformation that happened as a result of them. And in each case in the book, in Anatomy of 55 More Songs, each of these songs played a role in changing the shape and the direction of the genre they were in, and sometimes other genres.
I've got to completely agree with you. For most of the years that you cover, I've been in the radio business, so I had the privilege of playing a lot of these songs starting probably about a third of the way through, playing them when they were brand new songs, like Roundabout.
Wow.
So that's really fun to see songs that I recognize, and I remember their impact, and I remember what a difference they made in the lives of listeners from our perspective here in a radio station. But you also have, which is more or less coincidental, a number of songs that are in this list that are Grammy Hall of Famers. Not all of them, but quite a few of them, which is significant, I think, too.
Yeah, I mean, to make the Grammy Hall of Fame, that's just an interesting insight because not many get in there, and there's always a reason why they're in there. So for me, to just mention that, if a song did have that achievement, it's good for the reader to know that, because it tells the reader that there were people who know a lot about music who thought this song was an important game changer for the culture. That's why the Grammy Hall of Fame isn't like the Wheel of Fortune, where a wheel is turned and a song is picked. There's a lot of thought that goes into what songs are going in, and someone has to provide a pretty good rationale for why they want it in.
Now, one of the songs that I like the most of all of the list is a song that always seemed, I don't know, in a way emblematic of the era of the kind of middle part of the 1960s, when there was still a lot of happiness going on. But yet there was a change in it, and that's The Fifth Dimension's Up, Up, and Away. Songwriter Jimmy Webb, and the wonderful thing about your book, too, is you interview not just the composer, in this case Jimmy Webb, but also Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr., who were two of the members of The Fifth Dimension that later broke out and they got married, and they had their own duet, and then Marilyn eventually had a solo career as well. So these are people that have been around the block, and when they reflect on these things, it's a great story. So tell us the story of Up, Up, and Away.
I mean, Up, Up, and Away, in short, was a song that Jimmy Webb wrote while he was in community college. And it was just something he was just playing with until he had a radio host in from the West Coast who was a friend of his. He had him in San Bernardino, and he said, hey, listen to the song, what do you think? And the guy said, hey, this song would be great for a movie. Balloons, like, you know how the kids are on the beach with beach movies. I really want to do a movie about a screenplay about kids and ballooning. Now that sounds absurd to me. I know it sounds absurd to you, but you know, it's Southern California, so you got to give them a little slack. And long story short, you know, he takes Jimmy out to this hot dog stand near LA, well, in San Bernardino, and at the hot dog stand there's this big balloon with the name of the radio station on it, and he takes Jimmy up in this balloon. The balloon went up like 100 feet. It was tethered, but that was the gag, that if you won a contest for the radio station, if you called in, you got taken up a little bit in the air, and you could see everything around you, and it was so exciting. He takes Jimmy up, and Jimmy's looking up through the balloon, and it looks like stained glass to him. He can't believe how the sun is playing off of it, and he knows what the song is about. He knows what he wants to do with it, and the movie never got made, but that song went to the fifth dimension and became a blockbuster hit, as you know.
Another song that's on your list is Tommy James and the Shondells' Crystal Blue Persuasion. I, like probably most people who've ever heard the song, always kind of thought it had something to do with psychedelics. It was the era, after all. But as it turns out...
Isn't that an amazing story?
Yes. Yeah, completely different.
It's the complete opposite. It was actually a biblical reference. It was the Book of Revelations. A kid came up to him after a concert, I think it was down south, and handed him a sheet of paper with a poem and a title on it that said, I think it was Crystal Blue. And no, it was Crystal Persuasion. That's what it said on the top. And Tommy James, looked at it, and the kid, had his glasses on, his white shirt and tie, and he thanked the kid. And the kid really loved Tommy James. There's something about Tommy James. The kid just loved the music. And the kid disappeared, and Tommy took that back to the hotel, and it was a poem that the kid had written on the Book of Revelation. And Tommy and the group set words to it. They use a little influence from Groovin' by the Rascals to create that nice summery beat with a conga playing, that little Latin sound. And Crystal Blue Persuasion is about a reference inside Book of Revelation. It's just amazing.
Another song that's on your list is a song, I have to admit, it's one of the songs that always cheers me up when I hear it on the radio. It's just such a joyful song, Ain't No Mountain High Enough. The Diana Ross version in particular is the one where you interview people that were in the Supremes with her. You interview producers and Valerie Simpson, one of the writers. What makes this song so much of a pivotal song? Is it just the fact that Diana was leaving the Supremes to go off on her own, or what, there was more to it than that?
You know, the mind blower for me, Dave, is that when people heard, most people think the song that Diana Ross sings is different than the one Tammy Terrell and Marvin Gaye sang.
Right.
Ain't No Mountain High Enough. And in fact, it's the exact same song. But they did such an amazing job arranging it, where she's got this monologue, and then there's this build-up, and there's this almost this orgasmic crescendo, and she's just singing away. And I mean, the thing runs like 6 minutes, but it's like, it's a masterpiece for Diana Ross. It's her first solo, but it's a great example of how ingenious some of these people are, especially at Motown, where they can take an existing song, a song that has already been out and become a hit, a song everybody knows and is stamped in their head, and turn that into something symphonic and something so big that when you say to yourself, gee, it has the same kind of words as the old ones, but it can't be because it's a completely different song. And it wasn't. It was the same song, but it was really dressed up for the ball, really. I mean, it's just so glamorized.
One of the criteria that you had also was songs that always are misinterpreted, and Crystal Blue Persuasion is one of those. But another one is Jackson Browne's Doctor My Eyes. And I always listen to the lyrics and I thought, oh, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about, he's disillusioned, or he's seeing things in a new way. And so, but it really did have something to do with him going to the optometrist and having an eye issue, didn't it?
Well, that's the beauty, Dave, of asking a stupid question, which I always like. The dumber the question, I find, the more great information that comes out. And what I said to him was, I said, let me ask you, was something wrong with your eyes at the time? And he said, there was. And he talks about how there was buildup on the eye and he couldn't quite solve it with drops and he had to go to the doctor. But as he quickly pointed out, nobody is going to write a song about a visit to the doctor. Doctor, My Eyes was a metaphor for, I can't seem to see things in our society right anymore. Everything seems out of focus. Everything seems crazy. It became a vehicle for a socially conscious statement. But like all interesting things, like all great titles, where did it come from? It came from his eye trouble.
I got time for one more question, and that is about Todd Rundgren's Hello, It's Me. I discovered from your book that two of my favorite jazz rockers, Michael Brecker and his brother Randy, who were in the original album of Blood, Sweat, and Tears as saxophone and trumpet player, they're part of the backup. This is an example of a relatively simple song that is beautifully produced, and which is not a surprise because Todd Rundgren's a great record producer, but it's so completely different than the kind of stuff that he was doing live. I was fascinated by that.
Yeah, Todd is an incredible producer and a multi-instrumentalist and also a visionary. So for him, it was the song about a breakup. The girl dumped him because his hair was too long and her father turned the hose on him when he walked her home. So basically what he does is he creates a song. But the beauty of that song is she dumped him. But when he decided to write the song, he said, I've got creative license. I can do what I want. It's a song. I'm going to dump her. And that's Hello, It's Me. Those are the first words he imagined he would say if he called her to break up with her.
Well, Mark, it is absolutely a fun, fun book. I really enjoyed reading it. I know that our listeners will enjoy it as well. And thank you for making time to talk to us today.
Dave, it was great being with you. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Our thanks again to Mark Myers for joining us to talk about his new book, Anatomy of 55 More Songs, The Oral History of Top Hits That Changed Rock, Pop, and Soul, from Groove Press. For WTBF, I'm Doc Kirby.